Greetings. This is Eric Sinrod from Duane Morris coming to you from beautiful San Francisco with your weekly Tech Law 10, where the law and information technology intersect. And, of course, we have my twin partner in this endeavor on the line, the ever-globe-trotting famous Jonathan Armstrong. And, Jonathan, this time you're in Brazil, and query whether you're actually working or pretending like you're involved in Carnival. Tell us what's up in Brazil.
I'm working extremely hard, and there are clouds in the sky, regrettably, so I'm not in a position to hit the beach. Not yet, not at all. I've been doing a few interesting things in Brazil, and one I thought that was relevant to talk about is while I've been over here, I spoke at a conference, very good conference, organized by our friends at KLA here in Sao Paulo and KPMG on how to do internal investigations in South America, particularly those which are related to the UK bribery legislation or the FCPA. It was an excellent conference, and I think one of the things that we quite often forget is quite often on internal investigations or e-discovery for that matter, we, or most intelligent people in this space, know about the concerns with European data privacy laws and data export laws. And it's something, Eric, that you and I have been talking about maybe for the last 18 months now on these calls. But quite often, I think, people forget that some of these laws exist down here in South America as well. And this conference was very good at painting a picture of the complexities of internal investigations and e-discovery hitting South America. Not only the things that we've discussed in the past about data privacy and data and privilege, legal professional privilege, but also things like the right against self-incrimination, which from what I understand is felt particularly strongly here, and the professional duties of lawyers, which can often hamper or at least change the shape of an internal investigation because lawyers may be prohibited from sharing the information that they've gathered, for example, with the US government. And the US government would normally like that information to be shared with them if a deferred prosecution arrangement is going to be entered into as well. It's also public knowledge that there are a significant number of major anti-corruption investigations going on down here in South America at the moment. I was talking to somebody who said to me that he'd been involved in an investigation involving 150 reviewers for some months. And I was just puzzled at the figures that that might lead us to. And I know my maths here is a little bit shaky, and it literally is on the back of an envelope. But let's say that a good reviewer, if he's just reviewing emails, might get through, let's say, for the sake of argument, about 1,000 emails a day. That might be an appropriate rate for simple emails. So you've got 150 reviewers. That's 150,000 emails a day they're reviewing. And if you look, a lot of these investigations take 3-4 months, something like that. But if we extrapolate that, let's say 120 days, and by my maths, which admittedly might be shaky, that gets us to 1.8 million emails that they're reviewing. Now, obviously, the hit rate varies in search terms. As you know well, Eric, if you're doing an internal investigation or e-discovery, you'll collect a lot of emails. You'll then filter them down by using electronic techniques. And the physical reviewers should only be reading those that are likely to be relevant and responding to the search terms. So if you look at that total base of emails, to get 1.8 million emails that physically have to be reviewed by the human eye, you're probably between 80 and 100 million emails that you've collected. And that seemed to me, if those figures are right, and I know that's a lot of supposition, that seems to me a really interesting scale of the issues here. You know, if you have got a base of 90 million emails, let's say, just think of all of the privacy, professional privilege, bar rule type issues that you're going to get in that high volume of emails. So it seems to me that all of those things we were saying 18 months ago about the need to act local in an investigation but think global and almost reverse engineer the investigation and be very precise about the emails you're going to look at must be true given the experience of some of the people that have been at this conference this week. I wonder if you had any views on that, Eric.
Well, I do, of course. And, you know, I teach on this subject. I live this subject every day in my litigation practice. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, you talk about the review time. The review time, you know, of electronic data can be staggering. And we now get to the point in some cases where essentially the electronic discovery is the tail wagging the dog, because right at the outset of the case, the parties understand that the cost of e-discovery, you know, all in, sometimes can dwarf the actual amount at issue in the true dispute. So I see sometimes cases resolving and settling early on just so neither side has to engage in the whole process of e-discovery. Also, in cases that do proceed, you know, I'm seeing a pattern at times where the parties actually decide they really don't want too much review of the information before it's produced. Instead, there's agreement upon what relevant populations of data will be utilized. Certain search terms will be agreed upon, you know, to cut through the data that the populations agreed upon. And then the information, then of course there's a pull for attorney-client privilege information. You run the names of the attorneys involved. And then the information is simply produced subject to a very strong protective order that says that the information, of course, cannot go outside of the confines of the case. Information has to be returned when the case is over. And most importantly, well, at least importantly, maybe not most importantly, but importantly, that there's a strong clawback provision. So if it comes to light as the case goes on that something was produced, you know, inadvertently that should not have been produced, say, for example, it actually is privileged and somehow it wasn't caught, or there's, you know, important trade secret or IP information that's not germane to the particular case, it can be clawed back. And I'm seeing a pattern of that just to cut down on or even potentially practically eliminate review time. So I'm interested in your thoughts on what I just said, Jonathan, although we're sort of almost reaching our limit of our 10 in the tech law 10.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think in the e-discovery world, from what I understand, and you're much more experienced than me, the U.S. is getting proportionality where, you know, there has been a focus in the U.K. on proportionality for some time. And it seems to me that good thing, if you like, needs to move to some extent into internal investigations as well, that old-fashioned internal investigations seem to be get a big bucket and throw everybody's emails in. But as people email, IM, you know, communicate with each other much more electronically, I just question whether any corporation has the ability to, or many corporations have the ability to manage that scale of a search. 90 million emails is an awful lot to look through. And I wonder if we're going to have a move towards proportionality in internal investigations and in regulatory investigations as well.
Yeah, interesting thoughts. Well, this is a topic that's not going to go away, and I'm sure we'll be revisiting again in the future. But meanwhile, hopefully it's not all work and absolutely no play for you, Mr. Armstrong, down there in Brazil.
Well, I hope so. I hope to get about half an hour off later on.
And I want the record to reflect that about 2 minutes ago, Mr. Armstrong provided an admission that I'm more experienced than he is. I'll take that. I'm not sure. It's probably true in terms of chronological years, but Mr. Armstrong is quite the deft attorney, and he has ample experience.
That's very kind. I'll put it in writing for you, though.
I'd love that. Put it online. Send it to the world. Go viral. All right. Well, all that remains, as he says, this is, I'm now talking like Mr. Armstrong. All that remains is for us to say goodbye, and thank you ever so much. This is Eric Sinrod in San Francisco, ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. You know you can find us everywhere, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. Jonathan, bring it home, baby.
JP Armstrong at DwayneMorris.com. Do engage with us on this or other topics on the LinkedIn thing. If any One's a forensic bent, no doubt. You can criticize my maths. And we'll speak to you next week. Thanks again.
Thank you. Cheers.